Welcome to the Push-Pull Sales and Marketing Podcast. I'm Marcella.
And I'm Sherry. And each episode will provide you with sales and marketing strategies that you can implement immediately into your own business. Today, our sponsor is Blinkist for this episode. And we're going to be talking about pricing, the psychology behind it, and a couple different pricing strategies. This one was requested by...
This was actually requested by Jeff Zanetti of a wrestling mindset. So it's nice to see, not only is he a friend of mine, but he also listens to the podcast. He does a lot of the marketing and a lot of the direct sales for his company. So he had requested that and wanted to talk a little bit more about that. And it's something he knows a lot about, but he figured you'd want to hear about it too. So one of the first things he asked about was to talk about psychology and how different things work, and something, a specific strategy called anchoring. So one thing I wanted to ask, because you were a psychology major.
Yeah, but unfortunately we didn't have any business classes under the psychology major to teach you about, you know, the psychology of pricing necessarily, but no, I guess it applies.
I had a psych AP class in college. I missed a video about a narcoleptic dog, and I know that the whole class remembered that point, and I believe, yeah, that was about it. So, I think that this is something that should definitely be included, in more, psychology classes and more business and marketing classes, and it might be at other universities, it just might not be at Rutgers, but first off, go ahead.
Yeah, we weren't in a lot of business classes either.
I was in zero business classes at Rutgers, surprisingly.
But I do think that we are headed towards more of a movement towards understanding that the psychology behind human behavior does really impact business. And, you know, I think people are seeing it in the field of medicine that, you know, the brain has a really powerful impact on healing. And, you know, you have to kind of take all of that into account. Mental health is you know, a little less... stigmatized, and I think we're seeing that in the business world too, that it's not just like, you know, we're not being so harsh, and it's not necessarily about shoving sales down people's throats. It's the psychology behind it. You know, who are you marketing to? Why do they want your product? What does it solve? Like, really trying to think through to make it a more human process. Do you agree?
I fully agree. And one thing I was going to talk about in terms of university and stuff like that, we live in a day and age where we have a lot more data. So where psychology before was more like, well, this is kind of how I feel and stuff like that. But it really is a science, and there's a lot of data behind it. Same thing with sales, same thing with marketing. You can see different techniques and how they work because we're able to capture all that data.
True.
And we talked about a
especially with the digital strategies, right? We had talked about that you should be tracking and you should be capturing that information and keeping tabs on, you know, what's working, what's not, you know, using your CRM, using, you know, your inbound marketing things and making sure that everything's coming together.
Absolutely. One thing too, and talking about actual data and being able to analyze versus just going off the top of your head, I did take a business class. I took Writing for Business Professionals. I took an online course. So again, sometimes you go off the top of your head and you kind of think, okay, this is how it is. But until you look at the actual numbers, it's very surprising. Mm-hmm. But the first strategy to talk about, and we'll transition right into it, is a pricing strategy called anchoring. And what anchoring is, and this is separate than actual negotiating. This is basically what you do, is you take two different priced items or multiple different priced items, and you have one that is intentionally placed a lot higher to put people toward the other purchase or to get them to pay more money. So for example, when you're looking at watches or something like that, and there's a $10,000 Apple Watch.
Yeah, they're not really expecting anyone to buy it.
Apple might, but for the most part, they're not expecting people to put that. But when you see one that's $29.99, it doesn't seem that unreasonable. Or how much is the Apple Watch?
Not $29.99. I think $299.
$299.99. And we're going to transition into that one too. But even that would sound better. $29.99 from 10,000 is still, it's not a bad price point. It's a lot better because you anchor someone at 10,000 and then you're at,
well, you can't
3,000.
Drop too low either, because then, I don't know.
But you're looking at different products. I'm not talking about an actual price reduction or anything like that. That actual technique does work in terms of negotiating.
Is that also why sales do well? Like, even if you were never going to actually sell that shirt for $120, but it being on the price tag and then seeing that it's marked down, quote unquote, to $80.
Mm-hmm. That's...
Is that a separate kind of deal?
Well, that is a separate strategy, and it's very interesting if you look at the actual data. I believe it was
JCPenney tried to do no sales, no coupons,
no
and it
sales,
went horribly.
And it went because people actually expect that. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing for example, I'm the sales manager for a logistics company, P&G Logistics. We're over in Lititz. And when you deal with trucking companies, you have a base price and you have a discount. The discounts are in double digits, and it could vary. One trucking company can give you a discount of 70%. Another one can give you a discount of 80%. And the one that's actually at 70% is going to be less. But some people will say, oh, well, I have an 80% discount.
Right, because the perceived value is that you're getting whatever, that 10% extra better of a product or whatever.
Correct. Yeah, you're getting quote-unquote a lot more for your money. And the thing is, the ones that don't have that sort of model aren't doing as well when they have a sort of flat rate or mm-hmm. an actual flat fee. Mm-hmm. They're not doing as well as some of the other trunk companies. And it could be because the smaller ones, the flat fee is easier for them to do and easier for them to manage. Mm-hmm. But it's something that's pretty much expected. What we found is that it doesn't work on our side as an actual logistics company. So for us as a direct logistics provider, our customers, they like to have very, very straightforward pricing. A lot of my
competitors...
Does it
make them mistrust you if you give them a discount or what?
I believe if you add a quote-unquote perceived discount or if you throw that in, the reason why it doesn't work is because it's not industry standard. For a logistics company to say, well, your discount saves you this much, because it is disingenuous when you don't know what the actual base price is. With the trucking companies, for example, their actual base prices are published and it's readily available. So you can see what the actual base price is and you can calculate it yourself. But when someone else doesn't let you calculate it, or when someone else calculates it for you, it's something that's kind of missing. So, for example, when we talk about a pricing strategy, when you want to give something on sale and you want to discount something, you need to have the original price actually marked. And if you go to TJ Maxx or anything like that, you see what the initial price is. It doesn't just say up to 70% off, but you see that higher price point.
Right.
So we could talk about different pricing strategies and different things that'll actually work. Very interesting. I talked about Apple just a second ago, and $10,000 and $29.99. The number 9 makes a huge difference. You could have, as an example, two different items that are marked on sale. One that was from $65 to let's say $35, and $65 to $39. Which one of those do you think is going to sell more?
I already know the answer, but I would have guessed the 39 anyway, the one that ends in 9.
Correct. And the numbers actually show that the price point ending in a 9 sells actually 5 times as much as the one not ending in a 9. So there's a reason why so many things are a 9. And I think I saw something on, someone posted on Facebook, like, if it ends in an 8, it's the end of the month, it ends in a 7, or different, is
right,
that a Target?
I think there's, like, a Target blog post going around that, like,
is that,
how to know, and, like, a Costco one's going around.
Is that actually legit?
I don't know. It's, like, different, like, the code, that if it's, like, you know, 97 cents, like, whatever, $29.97, it means that this is really the last price drop or something. I don't know. I don't know if that's actually true.
Or it's an urban legend that has been propagated by Target, and it's a really good strategy because you prep them for that, so that way they're going to go for those price points.
Yeah. I heard recently, too, I feel like, and I don't know if it was backed up by anything, but people were trying to say that, like, 7 is the new, like, 9.
Yeah, and I would be interested to read more about that. It's good that we have our sponsor, Blinkist, and maybe they'll actually have a book come out about that, because a lot of the data and research that's widely available, it does cut off up to 2002, 2005. There are more recent studies, but some of the more extensive ones,
right.
I mean, with years and years of data you're looking at.
So since, 2005, are we so oversaturated with, whatever, 1999, that seeing, 1997 or 87,
mm-hmm.
I feel like to me if something's at 87, that seems, my perception is that that's significantly cheaper than the 99 cent.
You're smarter than most people, though, so I don't know.
But I mean, well, I mean, it is, but not, like, a ton.
She's so modest.
No, I meant it's only 12 cents cheaper, so it's not, but, like, in my head, that could change my mind, because I'm so used to seeing that it's 99 cents.
Mm-hmm.
On everything, if something stood out to me as like, oh, it's 1987, I might be more, if it's something I don't need, I would be more likely to buy it than if it ended in the 99.
Let me ask you.
Even if I didn't need it.
Let me ask you, and speaking of things we don't need, the thing that you wanted to buy that you saw on Amazon, what was the price of that?
35, I think.
It was 35, or was it?
I don't know what the...
Plus it had shipping.
All I know was that I've had it on my Amazon wish list, and it was $99, which I would never pay for it.
They angry.
And it dropped to 30 whatever. And I was like, oh, we got to buy it. And Marcella said, we don't need that.
Correct. Correct. and very interesting. It was 99. It wasn't 100. That actual price point, it could have been a strategy where they knew, okay, let's just list this very high and we'll see what we get, and then eventually we're going to drop the price.
I think it was listed high because it was totally sold out. It went viral. It went viral and it totally sold out. So there were a couple places that had a couple that were trying to sell them. Like, it was third party, were at like really crazy prices because the vendor was sold out.
And that's something we can talk about too, in terms of if you. And we'll also include this, or I think this is already on the website, Start With Why by Simon Sinek.
I think so.
Yeah.
By the way, if you haven't gone to the website recently, I did just give it a little bit of a facelift.
It's under resources,
pushpullsales.com. And if you click the resources segment right there on the homepage, it'll take you to a whole bunch of like book recommendations and... our sponsors and other stuff like that. Let me double check. What was it called again?
Start With Why by Simon Sinek. And yeah, I'm pretty sure it's listed there. Start With Why. Yep. It's listed right there in the middle. So one in
pushpullsales.com/resources.
And I think we might've talked about this in another podcast, but in terms of pricing points and stuff like that, you want to, and it seems rather, academic or fairly basic to say, but when you price something out, you need to price it out to get the biggest segment of the market. And a lot of times when people are pricing things out, they will forget that there's a set of early adopters that are going to jump on board and spend a lot of money on something,
like,
no matter what.
Regardless.
Or also when you're starting off with a company or anything like that, your friends and family... Yeah, you're going to be able to sell to them right away. So you're going to have false data, because you're going to say, okay, well, shoot, 2 out of every 3 people I talk to really like this. So you're talking to your friends and family.
Yeah.
You know, it's this sort of product. So you have the early adopters. Then you have a more reluctant bunch that'll be in the second wave that'll actually buy a product.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have ones that are going to need a lot more data, a lot more points. And then lastly... You have that last little bit where they will buy only because it's the only thing that's actually left. So, for example, you have a grandma who will buy a smartphone because you can't buy a regular phone anymore.
Right.
So,
and that's not who you're targeting.
No, you want to target, you want to target that actual second wave, you want to target the actual third wave, and you want to be able to get to those people. So I'm not sure about that actual $99 price point, because that could very well could have been the early adopters that had jumped on board. There are people that will donate money to Kickstarter, GoFundMe, anything like that for projects that will never actually happen.
I was listening to a podcast the other day, and she said she bought this thing on Kickstarter, and I forget what exact, it was something like a goat horn mug or something like that, and she was like, I was picturing it would be so cool, and I could carry it around, and like, it would be handy, and it would be a conversation piece. She's like, and then it showed up, and it's like this huge thing, and it's ugly, and I had bought two of them.
Oh gosh! Well, they actually got the product. That's not bad.
Right? Yeah. You've talked me out of that a couple times too.
Good. All right. So I think we're just at about the halfway point, and then second half I'm gonna rapid fire some more strategies. But we did want to talk a little bit more about our sponsor, Blinkist, and they also have a very good pricing strategies. They actually have three separate platforms. You have a free version you can sign up for. You get one pre-selected nonfiction book a day, and you can browse through
a
some.
Day?
Of, yes, you, wow. You can. You, it's pre-selected for you, though.
Oh, gotcha.
The so next.
Did you try the free trial at all, or did you dive right in?
It has a free trial for 3 days. I'm kind of a go big or go home. So I pretty much had bought that right away after day one. I'm like, you know, just take my money. Shut up and take my money. The next option up, and again, it's priced accordingly. It's $49.99, so it's not $50, it's $49.99. That version is called the Plus version. That'll give you actually 1,000-plus books, 40 new books a month. You can highlight things. It'll kind of summarize it for you. So,
right.
So basically,
and if
the
you're
basic...
hearing, if you haven't heard us talk about Blinkist before and you're hearing, why would I ever need 1,000 books a month? What'd you say, 40 books a month?
It adds 40 books to the library a month.
Oh, so there's 1,000 books and whatever.
1,000 plus.
Anyway, why would I need that many books a month?
I didn't explain what Blinkist is.
Right.
Go ahead. Build value first. Blinkist is...
So Blinkist takes these books and boils them down to the meat of what they're trying to get across. So, you know, the most important information, the most valuable information delivered to you in like 15-minute chunks. So, you know, you're on lunch break and instead of scrolling through Facebook or Twitter or whatever, unless you're looking at our Twitter feed, which is very valuable. But if you're not, then you should be reading Blinkist.
Correct.
Or listening to it in audio form.
And audio form is the next part up, and I'll talk about that actually in a little bit about building value first before you present price, because we're talking about price, I just dive right into it. You don't want to do it. You want to build value first. And the last version is called their premium version, which has everything that's in the plus version, the 1,000-plus book library selection, and also you can sync it with Evernote, and it has an audio version. And that is only $79.99.
Why would you want to sync it with Evernote? What does that do?
It's going to copy the notes directly to Evernote. So it's going to take the blink so you can build it in your
own
personal
library.
So
whatever notes that you're jotting down?
I believe the notes in the actual service, I will admit, I like to jot down myself. So I actually only go with the...
Patel likes to use his own horrible handwriting.
Yeah, well, I remember better, and we could talk about how people learn and stuff like that in another, we might have, but we could talk about it again in another podcast.
But anyway, if you're interested in Blinkist and checking out the free trial at least, and then getting hooked like Marcella was, pushpullsales.com/quickread,
correct.
And that'll take you right there.
And I first heard about Blinkist from the person that inspired this podcast's brother, Gene. Jeff Zanetti had told me about doing this podcast or doing one on pricing, and his brother hooked us up with Blinkist.
And are they WrestlingMindset.com?
WrestlingMindset.com, correct.
Go check them out, too.
And they talk about the psychology, and they have everything in terms of wrestling at the highest level. But anyways, talking about pricing strategies and everything. So first off, you want to not forget the basics of sales. You want to build value right away. People need to have value, but in a retail environment, there are some basic shortcuts that you can do that'll actually price things out accordingly. So very interesting. I read somewhere it's called the Rule of 100. If it's less than $100,
Okay.
You're going to want to list the actual percentage of discount. So if it's $75, you're going to say 25% off. If it's over $100, you're going to use the actual dollar amount.
Okay.
So, for example, if it's $150 and it is 10% off, you're going to say $15 off. You're not going to say 10% off.
Which do you think that has more to do with any, like, if 10% off sounds of $20 sounds a lot better than telling, you know, someone, what are you looking at?
I was looking at my notes here.
You're not going to list, like, ooh, you know, $2 off. Like, that's not exciting for anybody.
I'm not sure. I read it somewhere online, and it said somewhere about the study. But, again, there was data to back it up, which actually was what I was reading my notes on. Let's see here. If emotional.
There was another point that I wanted, another thing I wanted to ask you earlier, and I can't seem to remember it. So bear with us. Do we need elevator music?
No, it's fine. All right. So I can go back into that when you talk about that, because again, there's over 100 different specifics, pricing strategies. So one thing in terms of pricing is you do want to list options for people, and it's good to have them side by side, even if the options add up to the exact same thing. So if you have a $500 price point, you want to have five easy payments of $100, or actually $99.99. Plus a small $5 transaction fee or something like that. That'll actually add it up to that. Let's see here. In terms of pricing,
is there a certain point where you should break down the total? Like, is there a similar rule? Like you said, if it's over $100, you want to say the dollar amount, not the percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a certain threshold where you should give people payment options?
Payment options should be available for, I'm not sure at what actual price point. It really depends on what you're selling.
Right.
One thing that's actually very interesting.
Like, I feel like infomercials do it all the time.
Oh, yeah. At low price points. And that could be that the market that they're actually after. And that's why I'd be interested to see recent data. Because before, you know what? Someone might actually make three easy payments of $9.99 for a stupid junk toy because they're...
Right.
They're the type that are going to impulse buy, and as a result, they don't save a lot of money or anything like that. I'm not going to go into the whole psychology of wealth building, but one thing that is very interesting about that is how they have the different price points and how they have the different payment plans and what options are available. Even if you don't give those options, you still want to reduce things to the ridiculous. When talking about price, for example, it's better to say $84, $87 a month. It's only $84, only $87 a month for this, than to say, well, it's $1,000 a year. Even if, you know, it's going to cost them $1,000 up front, even if you don't present that option.
I just saw a post today that was like, for only $5 a day. And I was like, yeah, and that is a lot of money every month.
And that reminds me, maybe we can clip to that in the episode of The Office when they have the insurance salesman. He's like, it's just the cost of a cup of coffee per hour.
Yeah, so maybe not that ridiculous, but within reason.
Mm-hmm. In terms of retail environment, another quick tip. You're going to want to put the price in the bottom left-hand corner of the actual tag. You don't want it in the upper right. You don't want it in the upper left. You don't want it in the bottom right. Bottom left.
What about center?
Nope. Bottom left. That's that is ideal.
Huh.
This is
why?
A shorter.
Why? Because people pick up the tag and can look at it?
It might be with where you look and how your brain processes the same way. If someone looks a certain direction, they're actually lying or something like that. Huh. It might put them in a different mindset. We will put in the show notes. There is one that talks about if you're selling an emotional product, how to price it out. And then if you're selling a more rational product, how to price that out. But I'm not sure the reason. It does say to do that though.
So like jewelry compared to like toilet paper.
Maybe.
Like something you need versus like something you want. Like emotional versus practical.
Yeah. That's probably a good way to put it, or you know, like or insurance or something like that.
It's required, obviously, yeah.
Something like that. Talking about pricing strategies, the more higher value the item is, the more precise you should be with your cost, or the more precise you should be with your price. So, for example, if I'm buying a plane, people are more inclined to buy a plane that's $1,287,035 than people are for $1.3 million. And this is for higher priced
items. So is this why houses are always weird numbers?
Yes, and I'd be interested to see the actual data and how much of that is the weird number selling higher than the other numbers.
Yeah, I'd be curious too. Although I guess there are a lot of houses like on the, you know, like $199.99 or whatever.
Part of that is the actual psychology. And
part of it's the price searching. Like, we didn't even find our house because it was just above the threshold of what we were searching for.
Correct.
Which was not so smart.
Yeah, if it wasn't for our agent looking at a higher price point than what we showed up. It would have never showed up, and it's very interesting. He said, they would have put this here,
$4,000 over, of course.
It worked out.
Yeah, of course we consider it.
But yeah, so that is because of the tools that we have available too. So you have to consider that when you're pricing things out, if you're listing on Amazon, if you're listing on eBay or anything like that.
Right, because on Amazon you can filter
by price.
Yeah.
And if you have preset price points, you can filter things versus not having that. And that depends whether it's your own e-commerce site or you're working on someone else's e-commerce site. Very interesting about shipping. And again, me being in the world of logistics, I'd be interested to see the whole data. But what it does say, if you have an auction or anything like that, it's better to separate shipping and have it kind of added at the end, which I can kind of attest to that. Salespeople in general, they want to go with the trend and they want to say, well, everyone else is offering free shipping. And, you know, if I don't list free shipping, even if my base cost is higher, I'm not going to get as many sales. When actually people are seeing more value in the product itself, you can actually make more money by including shipping at the end and sell at a higher price point. So you can start off with a lower, if you're in an auction type environment, a lower initial price, including shipping, then starting with the higher initial price with shipping included. This is actual data.
Yeah, but I've also, I mean, and I'm just speaking personally, there have been quite a few times where I leave stuff in my cart because I get there and I'm like, oh, I'm not paying $15 for shipping.
And it depends on how well priced the item is. So if the item's, let's say, $100 or more, and again, we can post more information and more data on that. So we talked about anchoring, the general strategy. You start off with something very high, or you're going to start off with another product that is higher priced, with the hopes of someone going with the smaller product or pushing them toward that. Sometimes you want to include options that also make no sense, just to kind of push it toward that. And an example they gave
like
is
add-ons
or different packages. For example, you can have a web-only option for $50, a print option for $125, or a web and print option for $125. And the whole purpose of that is basically to add more value, to give both. You have web and print, because print by itself is worth $125.
Right.
Because who would go for that? Just as an example, like, well, if I'm paying $125, I might as well get the web version with it.
Yeah, but does that doesn't devalue the web version?
No, it's going to push people toward the other version, because I think that was the actual psychology behind it. In terms of strategies, beginning of the month, end of the month, discounts work toward the end of the month. It's something that people have become accustomed to. So again, the whole strategy of not having discounts or anything like that, or not having any sort of sale or excuse, it doesn't work. You want to do free trials in the beginning of the month. You want to set that up. So if you want to have a free 1-week trial or free 30-day trial, try to set up those promotions for the beginning of the month. If you are going to offer something that is free, make sure it actually is free. You're going to lose a lot of business that way if it doesn't actually come in free. So, for example, I got an email today from an actual software provider. I'm not going to say who. I had purchased one product, and it said, oh, last chance to take advantage of whatever free. And I was like, oh, well, maybe something was included in what I purchased, or maybe an additional add-on I didn't know about, some malware thing, who knows? And then you have to read the whole stupid email and said, oh, free with purchase of this additional thing.
I hate that.
You hate that.
I hate the free with purchase.
No, free is free.
Right.
People are not dumb. That strategy does not work. And this is a company that has been around since the early 90s.
Right. Well, I think that's probably the problem. They've probably been doing that since the early 90s.
It's very possible. So, yeah, in terms of general pricing strategies, some basic sales techniques you can use here, and not just actual psychology, powerful words you can use. The word only is super duper powerful. So it might seem simple, might seem easy to do, but you would be so surprised. And actually, I go through this with even with some of the sales reps who I'm training. Sometimes we'll talk about the cost to get something expedited, or to get something to there. And in your head, you're like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of money. You don't have a good reference point to compare that to that, especially with new sales reps. When I say, yeah, I can get that to California tomorrow, it's going to be $3,000. Mm-hmm. You know, without giving any sort of reference point, you say, oh man, that's a lot of money. But if I say only, actually, I can get that to California, I'm going to have that by 5 p.m. It's going to be fully guaranteed. If it's not there by 5 p.m., it's going to be free. I looked at the option. Actually, it's only going to be $3,000 to get that to California. Mm-hmm. It sounds a lot better. I also added some additional items.
Right.
If it's not there by 5, it's going to be free. Include everything with that.
Right. And you're also the expert in that. So there, you know, the customer is hopefully trusting you by that point, and they should be, in that you know that that's what it costs, and you know that there are other options out there that are priced higher, that you could be spending a lot more money doing this a different way. So,
correct.
So it is technically only this.
Correct. And you can even anchor too with the higher price option. Say, well, I have a couple different options for you. I can get it there by 8 o'clock. It's going to be $8,000. I can get it by noon. It's going to be $6,000. Or I can get it by end of day. It's going to be $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times people will actually go with that. One interesting thing I read about, you don't want to actually list competitors' pricing anymore. So if you see, like, competitors' pricing and do things as a baseline.
Like Geico?
I'm not sure how that works for the car insurance field. But Geico, I think they've actually got away from that.
I know,
no,
I was
it's Progressive
gonna say,
has a name your price tool.
Yes. I do feel like Progressive's gotten away from that recently.
Probably because basically instead of compare prices or now it's name your own price.
And we'll
get the insurance to match the price. And there's a couple different reasons why we talk about pricing things out. Sometimes if you see something priced super duper lower, you're thinking it is not even close. So for example, if I were to say hotels, hey, Sherry, we're gonna go away to Vegas. There's a couple different hotel options I'm seeing on Priceline. One of the hotels is $39.99 a night, and then there's three options that are $120, $130, and $140. How do you feel about that $29.99 a night hotel?
No way. It probably has cockroaches.
Something along those lines. when you include those other, when you price it too low or anything like that, you can actually affect the actual value of the price. But reasons why you don't want to necessarily include list competitors' options and stuff like that has to do with how much data and how savvy today's buyers are. So, for example, we were looking at a data provider, and the person from the one company we were looking at, we only knew of two of the companies that actually provide that sort of data. We were looking at import data. He listed three of his competitors I never even heard of before.
Right.
I didn't like the sales rep.
Right.
He didn't build rapport. So what did I do? I'm like, oh, shoot.
Go look up your competitors.
I'm going to go look at these people. And I know I'm not dumb. I know that you're going to say, this is a checkbox I have. They don't have this. They don't have this. And people are smart. They know they know it's BS. So if I had all the check marks, for example, like between like Ford and Toyota or Toyota and Lexus or they're the same company, basically. But I mean, people aren't dumb. Like, well, I'm pretty sure. You know, millions of people are not crashing Fords because Fords are built faulty or Toyotas or stuff like that. So very interesting. You don't want to include that anymore. If you have that on your website, I would recommend taking that off. And again, that's because we have enough
data
points.
But that's not to say, like, when you list, like, the checkmark thing, I see a lot of companies using the checkboxes for their different plans.
Yes.
That still makes sense.
And you want to have options. You want it to have it be simple enough. We talk about magic numbers. Three different plans works out very well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can even include another pricing strategy, what most people will purchase in terms of percentage, you say 70% of my customers go with this plan.
Our most popular option.
Our most highlight that, mm-hmm. and that's really where you want to navigate people toward, and that's where you want people to gravitate toward. Just really quick in terms of actual sales and stuff like that. Aside from strategies, oftentimes people will say, "Okay, well, that price sounds high," or anything like that, and actually overcoming that objection.
Listen to the podcast. How to handle objections.
You can listen to the podcast on how to handle objections. One great way to get over that, though, is pause, and that's very important. And then to ask them, well, how do you mean? Or how do you mean exactly? Or just repeat back and say,
it seems too high.
Very good. Yeah, I'm
picking up on things.
She's picking up on that. And then you want to get more information. And sometimes people don't know. So, for example, if I told someone how much it costs to get something delivered today,
if you told
Friday
me, like,
to Monday, $3,000, you might say, well, that much?
Yeah.
That seems high. Well, actually, what happens is we have to get this. It has to get a flight. Has to get there before 5 o'clock. Driver is limited to how many hours he can do, or I can do that with a team. Basically, it's going to be two drivers because the federal regulations limit how many hours someone can drive. You have insurance. And plus, you are chartering an entire space on a plane and an entire truck at pickup and at delivery
with
all the fuel just for your stuff. So I have another 51 feet of space that's not being used just so I can have your thing delivered. $3,000 doesn't sound so bad anymore.
Right.
So don't assume that your customers are as educated as you are about your product. They have an idea. They probably researched it.
Mm-hmm.
The value that you actually have, if that value is higher than the actual price, then you, I think Jeff Gittimer says, you may get the sale. So mm-hmm. if they like you, mm-hmm. they know you, and they trust you, and the perceived value is higher than the actual price, you might get the sale.
Right. And Gary Vee says a lot, too, like in his jab, 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 right hook. He's like, right hook doesn't mean that people are obligated to buy your stuff. It means that if you've been giving and giving and giving, then you have the right to ask for the sale or ask for, you know, for them to buy something.
Yep. And I like that you said Gary Vee because you know all the marketing people.
Yeah.
I know.
Although Gary Vee is sales.
He's a salesperson?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Mm-hmm. I don't put him in the same category as Brian Tracy.
I know, because his VaynerMedia, he does a lot with marketing, but he says he himself is a salesperson at his core.
Okay. We'll go with that. All right, so I think that about wraps everything up. Wanted to give a big shout-out to our sponsor, Blinkist. If you go to pushpullsales.com/quickread, you can find out about them. But long story short, what they do is they take nonfiction books, take a 300-page book, and boil it down to the most important things and everything that is valuable in that book into a 15-minute read or less. They have a couple different options. They have a free option that's actually free, and the other option's ending in 9, so $39.99 and $79.99. It's a great service. We also wanted to say thanks to, is it Ben Sound?
BenSound.com. And thanks to you guys for listening. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, and you can visit us at pushpullsales.com.
Rate us on iTunes, too.
You can rate us on iTunes. You can
really
share us
out
on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram now, which is at pushpullsales. And you can always email us, pushpullsales@gmail.com. If you have any questions, feedback, or
show ideas,
anything like that. But I think that's about it. We'll catch you guys next time.
See ya.